I'm going to call this meeting of the House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness to order. Our first item of business today will be a public hearing on Senate Bill 87A. Mr. Administrator?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Senate Bill 87 establishes a process to implement veterans' preference in public employment that emphasizes interviews for veteran applicants, maintains current civil action for unlawful employment practice, sets operative date of 1 March 2016, declares emergency effective on passage. As you'll see posted to OLIS, we have submitted testimony from Legislative Council, the City of Medford, the Oregon State Fraternal Order of Police, Lane County Administrator, Metro, the Senate Bill 87 Work Group, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, the City of Beaverton, Commissioner Lakin and Commissioner Farr from Lane County, the City of Eugene, the Oregon Coalition of Police and Sheriffs, Deschutes County Administrator, Bully, the City of Portland, and the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. We've got two proposed amendments, a dash 4 and a dash 6. Both of them are posted to OLIS, and there's paper copies at the public desk. Briefly, the proposed dash 4 requires the employer to consider information that a veteran submits that demonstrates transferable skills and to consider a description and explanation of the transferable skills during an interview. Removes the sole discretion of the employer relating to evaluating veterans' transferable skills. It requires a public employer to use one of two methods for applying veterans' preference when interview hiring process. Removes the public employer's flexibility to establish alternate methods and create certainty and clarity. It removes the limitation on the number of veterans an employer may interview and requires the public employer to review transferable skills if a veteran requests the public employer to provide a reason for the employer's decision not to hire a veteran. We also have the proposed dash 6, but just haven't gotten them. I haven't had time to summarize them, but I think we can speak to them today.
Okay. Very good. So I'm first going to call up Lori Skillman.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laurie Skillman. I'm the Senior Policy Advisor for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. The existing statutes on veterans' preference are unclear, confusing, and they really provide no real guidance for veterans who are applying for a job on how an employer is going to apply veterans' preference. Most veterans who apply believe that they will get 5 or 10 points. But that only applies in cases where a test is given. Most hiring processes involve an interview. And if the hiring process is based on an interview rather than a test, the law states that the employer shall, and here's the language, devise and apply methods to give preference. This leads to a patchwork of different methods for applying veterans' preference for each city, county, and state, and then all of the other governmental entities like TriMet and Metro. Senate Bill 87 has universal language, clear definitions, and defined methods for applying preference that gives veterans a fair, genuine, and real preference in the hiring process for public employers. The veteran can read the statute and know how preference will be applied. There are 5 key benefits for veterans in Senate Bill 87. It's beneficial to veterans first because a veteran's rights and benefits are clear and easy to understand. Second, it holds employers accountable because the methods for applying veterans' preference are clear. Third, the preference that's given to veterans is genuine and meaningful. Fourth, employers are required to give the top 5 veterans an interview. And finally, it makes it clear that if a veteran and a non-veteran are equally qualified, then the employer must hire the veteran. There are several amendments to the bill that have just been posted. Several of these amendments address the issue of transferable skills. Transferable skills are the education and experience a veteran obtains in the military that directly relates to the job they're applying for. I believe the concerns relating to transferable skills can be worked through and that Senate Bill 87 can be tailored to add in some targeted and thoughtful changes, keeping the fundamental pieces of the bill intact. At ODVA, we honor and value our veterans and believe their military experience and rigorous training has made them resilient, given them leadership skills, a strong work ethic, a sense of teamwork, and the ability to learn new skills and concepts. Providing veterans preference in a genuine and meaningful way is one way that public employers can recognize and honor the service of our veterans and provide them with the opportunity to describe their skills, including their transferable skills that they learned in the military. Thank you, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you. Any questions, Delory? Representative Huffman?
I'm probably going to have questions and discussion, but I don't know, Lori, we may want to call you back up.
I will be here.
Is that all right?
Thank you.
Okay. So next we have Madeline, is it Zine?
Zach.
Okay, Twyla Lawson and Lori?
Christopher.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and members of the committee. My name is Lori Christopher. I'm the Human Resources Director for the Legislative Branch, and this is the Executive Branch. And I brought a visual aid with me today so that you'll realize just the significant impact of the Legislative Branch and overall state government and employees, and likewise recruiting. This is my visual aid. This is a 10-inch paper plate. This is the Executive Branch. This is the judicial branch, and this tiny dot in the center is the legislative branch. By the number of employees in the legislative branch, we're exactly 1% of state government. Now, we swell during session to almost 1.75% of state government, and so that's where we are today. But my testimony is going to speak to what the continuing full-time employees that work at the legislative branch, not including elected officials or their personal staff. So it's the continuing staff, the approximately 350 people that work for the legislative staff. And during the 18-month interim of the legislative branch, we have hired less than 70 employees. So we're a tiny little branch. We don't do a lot of recruiting. And currently what we have, and this is as of December 14th before legislative session, from October to December of every even year, we hire about 300 employees in preparation of a legislative session. But prior to that, only 70 during the preceding 18 months. So currently in the legislative branch, in legislative council, we have currently no veteran employees working. In revenue, we have one employee, and that represents 1%. In fiscal, we have one employee, and that represents 0.5%. In the assembly, and this is all of the caucus offices and any of the continuing staff, not legislative members or their personal staff, we have 3 employees, and that represents 3%. And in legislative administration, which is the largest of the legislative agencies, we have 10 veteran employees, including our legislative administrator, Kevin Hayden, and our facility services manager, Dan Brown. We have 10 employees, and that represents 11%. So overall, we have 9% veteran employees, and that is compared to, per the census, about 4% eligible veterans in the workforce in Oregon. So how do we apply ORS? How we apply ORS 408.230 and 408.237 is any veteran who meets the minimum qualifications of the recruitment gets an interview. We realize that that is more generous than what the law prescribes, but that's the way that we apply it. And every veteran who applies for a position but that is not hired for that position gets an explanation as to why they were not selected for that position. In hiring for the legislative session in the fall of last year, we had 8 self-identified veterans apply for, out of about approximately 200 applicants, apply for positions in the legislature. And that concludes my comments, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Okay. Why don't we let all three, and then we'll see if there's questions.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Lively and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Madeline Zeich. I'm the Chief Human Resources Officer for the Executive Branch. And I have here with me today Twyla Lawson, one of the senior consultants in my office, and the specialist assigned to the Veterans Preference here with me today. So she'll be handling most of the detailed conversation. I don't have a good paper plate analogy like Lori has, but we're always trying to do as well as Lori does. So we'll do what we can.
Oh, sure.
And I appreciate this invitation to provide an overview of our current process. We promise to be brief, and we have a short PowerPoint presentation for you. As Lori mentioned, veterans make up approximately 4% of the workforce in Oregon. And veterans make up over 6% of the employees within the executive branch at this point. One of the things to consider is that veteran status is a voluntary field in our system. We don't have wonderful HR systems, for those of you that may have heard that before. However, we've been working on improving our veteran status since 2011, and our current state employees data now shows our employees are at least 6% veterans. We recently did a snapshot, and in that snapshot, the state received just under 300,000 applications for 7,500 job postings, of which 8.8% of the applicants were veterans or disabled veterans, and 9.3% of our hires were veterans. There is no minimum veteran hire percentage for state government. However, in 2013, the Federal Vietnam Era Veterans Readjustment Assistance Act recommended and set a goal for federal contractors of 8%. Over the last 5 years, our hires of veterans have consistently been over 9%. So we've exceeded that 8% that was set in 2013. We can provide a little bit more information about the process and how we've been meeting that 9%. But part of the reason for these outcomes, as we talked about it in my office and with others, is that we've established some practices for training our HR professionals and our hiring managers, as well as added some functionality to our application website that has a link to some information that veterans can use to assess their transferable skills. And we've also been working with our hiring managers to really be more proactive in exploring that information. Additionally, in our classifications for our current positions, we've been looking at using more equivalencies, so providing opportunities for those that apply to our system to use equivalencies. So for example, 3 or 4 years of experience in a related activity may count as a bachelor's degree. So as we're reviewing our classifications, and we're in that process right now, we're looking to target those equivalencies that may make sense. So now Twyla, I'll kick it off to Twyla, and she can talk a little bit about our process, and we're going to give you a little demo of our training that we put together.
Okay, so I tried to make this as interesting as possible. For the record, my name is Twyla Lawson, and I'm with the Chief Human Resources Office with DAS. Before I go to the next slide, what I'm going to show you here is the current law requires preference to be applied in three ways. For the initial application screening, to develop a list of persons to interview. For application examinations given after initial application screening. And as Lori Skillman referred to earlier, it also requires that states devise and apply methods for employers to give special consideration when a scored process is not used. So to accomplish that, the state of Oregon implemented Oregon Administrative Rules. And our administrative rules require you have all applicants meet the minimum qualification. So that's the first option, is to interview all applicants that meet the minimum qualifications, or to select a group of veterans who most closely match the agency's purpose in filling the position, considering along with the non-veterans who closely match without the preference. So, for example, if based on the review of their materials, they were ranked at, say, a high group, then the veterans that are below would then receive preference and may move into that high group, and I'll show you that. And so we have both a scored or unscored process. So we thought it might be helpful for you guys to see some screenshots of statewide training that we have available for our hiring managers in our electronic application system. And so this first screen that I'm showing you here is where we explain to hiring managers how to convert a 100-point scale. So, for example, if the total possible points are, say, 20 points, how they can make that make sense for a hiring manager, okay? But this next screenshot, actually, I'm going to show you how we train the manager, and I videoed myself doing this. So the hiring manager, when they do the training, actually has to do these movements. So this is an example of the sorting process. And you'll see that the Mary vet there gets moved up one sort, and then Joe Military gets moved up two sorts. So this is how we explain to a hiring manager how to go about a sorting process, okay? The next example that I have here for you is the rank process. And you'll see Mary Vet then moves up one rank, and then we move Joe Candidate over, and then John Military gets moved up two sorts because he's a disabled veteran. So we just wanted to give you some examples of how we currently administer this today. So our greatest challenges today, the separate statutes have caused some confusion, the fact that there's ORS 408.225 and then there's 0.230 and 0.237. For example, 0.230 states that providing a preference is not a requirement that the public employer appoint a veteran or disabled veteran to the civil service position. However, that is not repeated in 0.237. So there's been some confusion on whether that applies to both. So that connecting those three statutes, that's been a challenge that they're not connected. The law includes language that is not defined, such as required skills required and requested, and it is challenging to administer a preference at later steps of the selection process when the top applicant pool gets to about five or less candidates. That is very challenging, and we've done our best to teach hiring managers how to do that, but that is a challenge for the current law. And then there is some confusion as to whether a disabled veteran also has to meet the definition of a veteran, meaning that they have also had to have been honorably discharged. Okay? So those are our greatest challenges with the existing law. And if you have any questions, please. So next, we were asked to share our observations of the draft language. The points that we want to cover are that the clarifying language to specify the intent of the law is helpful. It will be helpful. We believe it will be helpful to public employers and to veterans and our non-veteran applicants. The process is actually very similar in ways to the Oregon administrative rules that we have in place with state government. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to show you the sorted example and the ranked example. It clarifies that a disabled veteran must also be a veteran. It defines preferred qualifications and required qualifications. It limits public employers to two types of selection processes, the tested and scored and sorted and ranked. And that's a fact of what it does. And we understand and are able to implement that. It reduces the number of steps in a selection process where a veteran preference must be applied. And it moves the requirement to provide assistance from the Veterans Affairs Department to the Employment Department to employees who specialize in providing those services. So those are our overall observations of the language. The potential impacts of this language, it would require us to update our OARs and update statewide training for both, you know, statewide and agency specific. But that is just something that will happen, and we're absolutely comfortable, of course, with that. We also reviewed the language very, very carefully, and we involved several HR directors and recruiters for potential concerns or challenges that we saw. And the only challenge that we saw that we would like to bring before you today is in the tested, and I got to move here, catch up with myself. In section five, so the language provides two processes, tested and scored, and sorted and ranked. Within the tested and scored section, it provides the word rank five times. That could present a challenge in confusion to veteran applicants, to public employers, and we did review very carefully the use of the word tested, scored, and sorted. We didn't have that with any of those other words. It was only with the word rank. So we would want to bring that to your attention as something. And then we also looked at the definition of rank order, and are very confident that the removal of that definition would not present an issue, and it would help us be able to have the word rank removed from those five locations. So we recommend replacing the word rank with the word score or scored in that section of the bill, and remove the definition of rank order. And you know, we believe that it's that's the only thing that we want to bring to your attention. So,
Chair Lively, thank you for the opportunity to speak before you and the committee today, and we're happy to answer any questions that you might have for us.
Thank you for taking the time. Questions? Representative Parrish.
Thank you. On the statistic that you've pulled up, that 9% hiring in the last 5 years of veterans, if you were to sort out the military department and VA, would you know what that number actually looks like? It would make sense that those are two departments that hire veterans, and I'd be interested in, you probably don't have it off the top, but I would be interested in seeing that scored outside of those two organizations to see what sort of a true outside of the universe looks like as a percentage of new hires.
Okay, Chair Lively, Representative Parrish, we can get that information back to you.
Thank you.
Other questions of this panel? Representative Huffman?
I'm not sure. Maybe you guys can answer. I don't. How did we get here today? I'm seeing some. Brian had delivered us over the weekend a copy of some information that really was kind of eye-opening to me. That I'm getting old, so I could be forgetting, but I don't recall conversations couple of biennia back when we were looking at trying to get the 2007 bill, I think it was, to do more of what we wanted and felt like we needed it to do. I don't recall, but maybe it's because Rhett Matthews and his LA did a lot of the footwork on it. I just don't recall a conversation about the 2007 bill. And so it's kind of like we came up with another bill, and was it 2011?
Mm-hmm. Was it 11?
Almost in a vacuum, it seems like. And then to complicate matters, it seems like legislative counsel, whoever the drafter was in the 11 bill, allowed four terms to be put in the new bill that were not defined, apparently not normally used in other ORSs, where we could point and say reasonable whatever is defined as this is what we mean by that. So then my question about, because of those things that are kind of glaring to me, is it Senate Bill 87, where did that come from? And was that a committee bill that somebody came up with, and was there a work group that...
There was a work group.
Not formal.
Okay.
On the Senate interim.
Interim.
President of the Senate.
There's no House members on that.
And it was the Interim Committee on Veterans Affairs.
No, I don't. I'm just throwing that stuff out there and didn't, you know, not sure who I'm asking, but it.
Well, I think Lori might be able to answer that. Is that, you can address that, or we'll let Lori. I think that's a good question to understand exactly how we got to where we're at.
And is there a work problem?
Yeah.
Chair Lively, Representative Huffman, members of the committee, again, my name is Laurie Skillman. The genesis of Senate Bill 89 came from the House and Senate committees last session in February of 2014. It is a bill that came from the Senate committee, actually, and they ask that a work group be formed, and not a task force, but just a work group of public employers and other interested people to come together to deal with the implementation aspects of veterans' preference. There was a lot of litigation going on. There's a huge amount of confusion. It is an extraordinarily challenging statute to implement and to understand. And in large part, that was because of the addition of this new section in the statute 408-237 that dealt with transferable skills, because nothing meshed with the other two statutes on veterans' preference. And so it just created a lot of confusion, a lot of difficulty in implementing it, a lot of questions, enforcement issues, and so on. So the committees actually asked this group to take a look at it and to make recommendations to the legislature on statutory changes, proposed legislation. And so in December of last year, the Senate held hearings on this, and this work group that was formed, which was a 13-member stakeholder work group, presented a legislative concept that is now Senate Bill 87, and a report which I also submitted to this group on the work of that task force or that work group, and what their thoughts were behind it, what it was they tried to accomplish, what were their purposes, intents, and so on. So it was a request of the legislature from a work group to come up with some legislative answers to these challenges.
Representative Evans, are you have a follow-up? Representative
Maybe, but that's okay. Fine.
Representative Evans.
I can give you a little bit of history and then a kind of a space of unknown, and then where I enter the story on this, because Amendment 6 is actually I helped put in. Originally, in 07, when I was working for Governor Kongoski, we put in the idea about getting people an interview. That was the goal. And then I left in 10, and it got changed in 11 with the things that you just noted. Evidently, for some, there was some confusion. There is a little bit of debate about how unworkable this is, but nonetheless, some people find it unworkable. Senator Boquist, I think more than the House side, I think the Senate wanted some type of clarification, and there was a work group that then split partway through, as I understand it. I was informed coming into session by some that had split away from the work group about confusion and disagreement with the work product moving forward. I've had conversation with Senator Boquist. I know Chair Lively has had conversation with Senator Boquist. I think there may be very different opinions on how we got here, but the fundamental question is if we're going to improve it, that perhaps an approach that clarifies the procedure, clarifies whether there's one way or not one way to put the points together. Boley has some clarification, some rules. There have been some lawsuits. I think we might get lost in trying to understand how we got here. The most important thing, I think, is if we want to have a preference system that is understandable, makes sense, and fits the needs of public entities as well as the veterans, we have, I think, through the amendments anyway, a much better vehicle than currently exists.
Mr. Chair.
Right ahead.
So as a follow-up on that, and I'm just going to throw that out, I want to proceed very, very cautiously. I want it to make sense for government entities hiring, but no offense to anybody here at the dais particularly, maybe a little bit, but the majority party, I think in my mind, complicated things 2 weeks ago when the House passed out a bill that requires convicted felons to get a interview. And I may be mischaracterizing the bill just a bit, but I don't think so. And so I want to be very careful what we do on this. If on one hand, and I'm all in favor of reentry and support systems and whatnot, but I'm just throwing that out there, that I want to be very careful how we decide on this.
If I...
Representative Parrish, do you want to...
Well, I'll speak to that, because I have sincere concerns about organizations, mainly local jurisdictions, who come to my office on this bill and said, oh, this created a right of action, and we're being sued, and I am assuming the state of Oregon, as a state employer, has not been sued because you found a way to implement this and are making it work. So I haven't heard or read anything about, I'm a pretty voracious reader, I've not read anything about the state of Oregon being sued, where you're seeing this happen in local jurisdictions, who came and said, hey, we have to fix this thing, and you know, we want to hire veterans, and that's great. But then in this other bill, effectively a similar, albeit different, but parallel civil right of action gets created in the issue around the ban the box. And I'm highly supportive and have brought bills to help people reentry out of the justice system. And so, but if the issue is local governments coming to me saying there's a civil right of action that's been created in the bill we passed in 2011, and then there is a civil right of action over here in it for a different category of folks, and there was no similar conversation in my office about that, then I question why we're fixing this bill. If clearly on the one thing, one issue, nobody is interested, cities or counties, interested in the civil right created over here, but we're over here tamping this down for veterans. I don't feel comfortable with that or good about the situation we've inadvertently found ourselves in. I'd like to see, if we're going to move forward, I'd like to see both actions addressed that were created by this body, either the one that's still hopping in the Senate on the ban the box side, and then this issue over here for veterans. They are slightly different, but parallel, in that you've created an employment right of action in 3025, but nobody from the city of Portland, or, you know, I'm sorry to call it the city of Portland, but their mayor is actively saying that the 3025 or something like that is good public policy, but sending their lobbyists to my office to complain about what we did in 2011. I see that. I have an ethical problem with that.
So members, let me just kind of clarify what my intentions was of even starting this conversation here. So my intention was just to get an opportunity for anybody that wanted to provide input to provide the input. I certainly want to then encourage all of your questions and input to have the conversation, and then decide after we've done that, is there a path forward or do we need to do something else? My intent isn't to try to rush to after we hold a hearing and do a work session. That's not my intent whatsoever. But my intent was, because I've heard from multiple different parties too, is try to, and I share yours, is how did we get here? And some of this, Laurie, the information you provided in stakeholders helped me understand. I'm still not clear exactly how it went on there, but at least I understand it's in the background. But my intent here is just that we provide an opportunity, we listen to that, and then we, the committee, have a chance to talk about it. And based on that, do we kind of have a consensus? We can move forward. Do we need to do something additional? And I'm open to having those conversations.
So then I'll ask the follow-up question then.
Okay.
So we'll get back into question mode. Has there been anybody filed a lawsuit against the state of Oregon as an employment action under the 2011 statute that we created?
Representative Lively, Chair Lively, Representative Parrish, members of the committee, there have been lawsuits filed. Thankfully, since we have had our process in place, when we followed that process, they have not been successful.
Okay.
As you know, people can file anything.
Sure.
So,
have they, successfully?
They have not been successful
because of failure
process.
To implement
That's
this
correct.
Law. Okay, thank you.
Representative Chair Lively and Representative Huffman, Representative Parrish, understanding the angst associated with the other issue as we continue through the panelists today, I ask you to recognize that -4 and -6 are structurally different than many aspects of the bill as it came over from the Senate. So if the concern is a process in place that ensures the best chance for veterans to get a fair shake, -6 was actually written largely with the help of the very folks that would actually be taking cases to court. So I think you may find a remedy in that that you can live with, and as the folks come forward and talk about that, you might ask specifically the folks that were involved with the -6 how it may help ease your concerns on that.
So let's move on. Any other questions of the panelists or Lori while they're up here? Okay, thank you all very much. That was very helpful. So,
Mr. Ibbins,
I'm going to get. So I think I'll have Paloma from Sparks from Boley, if you'd come up please and provide the Boley perspective. Welcome.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Paloma Sparks with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. We are here today to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 87A as it came over from the Senate. This represents a significant rollback of existing veterans protections. We enforce the current veterans preference under our civil rights law. We are committed to making sure that veterans have a fair and meaningful shot at a job. Both this committee and the Senate Veterans and Emergency Preparedness Committee in 2014 asked Boley to lead a work group to get various stakeholders together to take a look at veterans preference, because there was some confusion, some frustration among some state and local entities that were having difficulties applying veterans preference. We were actually making some pretty good progress. We were talking about definitions, and then people really wanted to sort of start over. We think this law is pretty new. We should give it a chance. I think public employers should be really trying to figure out a way to make this work rather than trying to scrap it and start all over again, which is a lot of sort of the approaches that, you know, current law allows agencies to have a system for applying a preference that is not limited and is not dogmatic and is not narrow, because we want to be flexible and acknowledge the needs of different agencies. You know, there can be a small county that's going to need to be able to do things differently than, say, how DAS would apply something. At this point, if what we need is certainty, I guess we can narrow it down quite significantly and just tell agencies and local governments that this is the only way to apply veterans preference. I'm not sure at the end of the day that's the best approach. So Boley has, we believe that there's room for compromise. We suggested the Dash 1 amendment on the Senate side, which would have just simply narrowed down to what it means to be qualified for the veterans preference. It would narrow it to make sure that a veteran would have to meet the minimum preferred and special qualifications that an employer was seeking before they would be eligible for veterans preference. We believe that that could narrow the pool down to address some of the concerns about having too large of a pool of veteran applicants. But right now, this is a veteran protection, and we don't believe that this is the right policy. It is our position and our understanding that the legislative intent was that all qualified veterans should be interviewed, and we want to stand firm in defending that position. We're an agency dedicated to protecting and preserving veterans' employment rights, and in the Senate bill, Boley proposed I already told you about the amendment. So I urge you to oppose Senate Bill 87 as currently drafted or adopt significant amendments. I think that both the Dash 4 and Dash 6 are a good start. We still have some concerns about there's going to be some veterans that might be left out of this process that should be eligible for it, but we think that that is certainly a better product than we are looking at right now. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative Escobar?
Yeah, it isn't really a question. It's just that I agree with some of what you're saying. But, you know, I don't understand why this has become such a problem with people, with the entities involved. It's amazing that it's not a problem really with the state, but it seems to be a problem with other people. And, you know, the biggest offender we've ever had since I've been on this committee has been the government. The private sector doesn't have a problem with this. Some of the public entities don't have a problem, but there are certain segments of our government that have a real problem with this, and I have a problem with them having a problem. It seems inevitable to me. I would never take a yeoman to go into an MP position and take that as being part and qualified. That isn't the intent of this law. It never was. And, you know, a lot of us are shaking our heads because we understand that those are different jobs. So, but if I had something, say, a clerical job, and I had a yeoman or I had a personnelman, then we would. But I can't believe that anyone has actually come to the point in saying it'll cause too many people to be interviewed. And I've heard that. And to me, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. But I'm done now, and I'm good for the day.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to get one question on record.
Okay, please.
And we've had this conversation before, but Boley has interpreted the 2011 bill as an interview at every sort of level of the process. I will put on the record that was never sort of in the legislative intent. So can you talk to me about how Boley got to that decision in the rulemaking process?
Chair Lively, Representative Parrish, Boley interprets it to say that a preference must apply at every stage of the application process, in large part because the language in statute says that a preference will be applied when there is an application examination. And we think that mean, and we have interpreted that to be anytime you would be cutting folks out of the process, that you would apply a preference. It doesn't mean that, you know, the lowest performing veteran would continue to be in the pool of applicants that are being considered, but somebody who, because of the preference, continues to stay competitive should be continued to get the preference.
Follow up, different question.
Go ahead.
So the other thing is, how many actions have been brought to your office on this? I mean, where you've had a veteran actually take the step of going to Boley. I mean, my husband's a veteran. He's been applied for a few government jobs, has not received an interview. We did not take the step to go to Boley. I guess we could have, but did not take that step. How many veterans are you seeing use that, exercise that as a labor right to them? And is that number upticked at all since 2011, or are you seeing something that's sort of a par and not any different than what you'd normally see in any given calendar year of labor complaints that come to your office?
Chair Lively, Representative Parrish, we have seen one case make it fully all the way through the process. The language change in 2011 gave veterans a little bit more rights, and so they are enforcing their rights a little bit more than they have in the past. I don't know exact numbers, but we haven't had a lot of these, but I have heard of other cases.
And one more.
Absolutely.
So the case that went all the way up through the system, I remember reading briefly about it in the news. I mean, and it's public record. Can you describe what triggered that and why you found for the claimant or whatever you call it, person?
Chair Lively, Representative Parrish, I don't want to get too deep into it, but what we found was that the local government didn't have a real clear process in place for how they were applying a veteran's preference. They were aware of it, but they couldn't really articulate what that process was.
Any other questions for our former? Thank you very much for taking the time to testify. Doesn't mean we won't call you back, but we appreciate you coming.
And I can get those numbers on complaints file.
That'd be great. Yeah. Okay, so now I will call up Sean Rydell and Arthur Towers.
That's how I struck that Arthur out there and just.
Just introduce yourself for the record, please.
Sean Rydell. And my name is Arthur Towers, here on behalf of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. My name is Sean Rydell. As a matter of introduction, if I may give a little bit of my biography. I am a 21-year veteran of the United States Marine Corps Reserves and the United States Marine Corps Active Duty. I've served two tours in Iraq as a combat engineer, and I have an infantry background. I am in my civilian career, as I tell people, on the outside world. I'm an attorney in private practice. I was an attorney for the government at both the Deputy District Attorney for Multnomah County and the DOJ for about 12 years. And just under 3 years now, I've been in private practice where I represent a niche clientele of law enforcement officers and veterans. I am also 40% disabled veteran. I'm here testifying against Senate Bill 87 and in favor of the Dash 6A amendments. In my less than 3 years of private practice, I have assisted veterans in filing no less than 4 complaints with the Bureau of Labor and Industries for the misapplication of their veterans preference points from agencies both in Multnomah County and state agencies. Or I should say state agencies. Currently on my desk, and I worked on this morning, are 2 other draft BOLI complaints that I hope to forward to the Bureau of Labor and Industry later on this month for their review. And I currently have a case before the United States District Court in Oregon for procedural due process violations on a public employer for the misapplication or retaliation, I should say, for a veteran trying to exert his rights under the Veterans Preference Statute. If I may, I had some prepared testimony, but listening to some of the questions, I'm going to go off script and answer some of the questions or attempt to answer some of the questions that came from the committee. The current bill isn't broken. The current law isn't broken. People just don't want to apply it. If they follow the law and they listen to BOLI, there's no problem. No one has defined, no one has sat up here why I've been here and defined what needs to be fixed. I've heard phrases like a lot of litigation, define a lot. I've heard phrases like a lot of interviews, define a lot of interviews. I've heard phrases like workable or unworkable, define unworkable. If you read the statute, if you follow the administrative rules, it's very simple. I end with the understanding of what veterans' preference is. What we learned in Korea, what we learned in Vietnam, is that when you don't mobilize a whole nation, people get left behind. Veterans' preference makes up for that. You took 4 years, you took 10 years, your peers got ahead of you. We're going to make it a level playing field. Transferable skills is a way for public employers to avoid giving veterans preference. The current law says the veteran has the burden of proving why they deserve preference. That is an insult. It is up to the employer to tell us, bring us something to show us why you don't get the preference. A transferable skill is someone who one time volunteered to go to war. And that's the type of people we want working in public employment. And you don't have to prove anything ever again. Questions?
Questions for Sean? Doesn't look like it. Arthur, do you have?
Sure. Chair Lively, members of the committee, again, my name is Arthur Towers, the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. As I mentioned in my written remarks, we represent attorneys who fight for workers who've been discriminated against, including veterans going through the preference process. And couple of things. One is that in my written remarks, I refer to the A5 amendments, and then a little change to the A5 amendments. That's what indeed turned out to be the A6 amendments. Okay. So that's what we're, those weren't ready when I was writing my testimony, but the A6 amendments are what we are talking about. And just one thing to clarify, I think, from Mr. Rydell's testimony, is that it's the current bill that puts the onus on the veterans to prove the transferability of the skills, and we think it's much fairer for the human relations professionals, you know, some of the talented people you heard from earlier on today, to you know, gather that information. And so that was one of the key changes that we wanted to make in the bill. But I'll stop there. Happy to answer questions about the written testimony or other testimony.
Okay, Representative Evans.
Thank you, Chair Lively. For either one of you, would it be fair to say that if the bill If the bill goes away, the law is in place, it can be followed. But if there needs to be a change, if there needs to be clarification, that the Dash 6 amendments would make things better than what we may have right now.
The Dash 6 amendments, I'll draft.
Yes.
Yes. The Dash 6 amendments will correct the problems I foresee with Senate Bill 87. Boley does a really good job of training people on the current law. Mm-hmm. And if people reach out to them, they come and give them a great PowerPoint. You can ask them. I've seen it. And there's plenty of state agencies, because I've turned plenty of clients away, who do this right. We just saw the testimony to it. You just got to follow the current law. So to answer your question, the amendments are because I found such objections to Senate Bill 87. I don't think there's a problem with the current law.
Other questions? Representative Escobar.
So you agree, though, that and I have a tendency to agree with you that the problem with the system is that people don't want the system to work. That's what I'm thinking. Obviously, there are people in the state of Oregon that can make it work. We've just had people that said, yeah, we can make it work. But obviously, there's people that doesn't. I couldn't believe someone saying that they didn't understand it, so there was some confusion. Well, is there something wrong with picking up the phone and asking somebody? How does the system work? I think they could call one of those ladies in the back and probably get an earful of how it works. So I guess maybe I'm in the same conclusion that they are, that maybe this isn't necessary. I don't know. I need more input.
Any questions members have for this panel? Representative Huffman?
Maybe, and Sean may too, but Rep. Evans, do the Dash 6 amendments, well, first of all, is it basically a gut and stuff of Senate Bill 87, or
not
just
exactly.
Majorly changes?
Major changes, not
major
a gut and stuff.
Okay. Number two, was there work done to accomplish the goals of trying to connect with the 2007 bill that you were involved in? And then also some of the ambiguity stripped out, explained, clarified from the 2011 bill?
Chair Lively, Representative Huffman, I'll answer and then give you guys a chance to take a whack at it if that's okay. Because I was here when we did the 2007 and a part of the conversations kind of sort of since, we sat down with ODVA and a trial lawyer, Sean, and others, and Arthur, took input from other agencies that I've been talking with all through the session. And here's basically how I can answer that question. Number one, going into session, I didn't think there was a problem. I'm still not convinced that there is, but some people think that there is a problem with clarity. Okay, fine. If some people think there's a problem with clarity, we can give them clarity. The second piece is, if we're going to do something other than what we have, I wanted the most clear and simplified and available for remedy process that we could have, so that we didn't find ourselves 5 years from now in the same problem that we're in today. So that's why I asked that we write up what we did in terms of it basically tries to take a little bit of the concern about clarity. It redefines a few things. It makes sure that the employers have to justify why they didn't do things in writing, which currently they don't necessarily have to do. So it is a slightly different way to get us to where we were trying to achieve in 2007, that at the end of the day, all things being equal, vets are given a chance and a little bit extra lift up because they have been away for several years. They have been doing things for King and Country, okay? So at the end of the day, I'm actually, if we're going to move forward with the bill, I'm pro Dash 6 and whatever else we need to change it. If we think that there isn't a problem out there, I'm okay with the law as it is. But the bill as it came across from the Senate needed some structural changes, and that's what we tried to provide, so the two options are very clear. Does that answer?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'll let Sean finish up.
Chair Lively, Representative Huffman, what I have found for the veterans who come to me and complain that they have been denied their veterans' preference. The current law has what I refer to as an escape clause. It allows the public employer to come up with their own system. Every time a public employer has come up with their own system and a veteran has seen me, I have a cause of action because they just don't do it right. And I don't know if it's because they don't want to, they just don't do it right, or they don't do it in the detail that these fine professionals do back here. If these fine professionals gave that PowerPoint to every public employer in the state, then 10% of my business would be gone. And I'm okay with that. If I never do another veterans preference case again, I'm okay with that. If they just do what they did, it is workable. It's that escape clause that gets people in trouble because the agency thinks they can do a better job and they don't do it to the detail that they do or that Bowley will teach them how to do. And I repeat this, Bowley's very good at this. You just got to call him.
And you, Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if maybe we shouldn't get this down to specifics, because I think that DAS should make the policy and let us look at it to see if we're okay with it, and then disseminate that out to the other departments. Because if we have 15 different policies, we're never going to catch this thing. So
again, we have several directions we can go.
Don't mention I just task force to representative.
not suggesting it, but I want to make sure we listen to everybody that's here. And I can appreciate some of this conversation may send mixed messages to those in the audience of where we're at, but I assure you that we're going to take all the testimony, then we'll have a rational conversation about what the path forward is not before we take any actions. There's obviously what we're identifying here, there's confusion, concerns, you can say what you want to, and so that's the intent of this, is to try to get all that together, then we can decide where we go. But I appreciate your taking the time to testify today.
Yeah. Chair Lively, thank you. And I just wanted to draw out one point that Mr. Rydell mentioned, but I think deserves underscoring, is that Mr. Rydell's turned away clients, turned people away who felt they had an issue because employers, the human relations professionals, did do their job correctly. And so, it can be done.
Can I just ask somebody about the Dash 6? There's a section in that says that must include a minimum of the 5 highest ranked applicants. Yeah. Is when we put that into language, does that create the highest ranked by whose standard? Is that the individual governing agency who has a ranking system and we follow their system? I mean, that it feels vague to me about what's the highest ranked applicants and how that gives any certainty or surety to a veteran that they are tracking through somebody's ranking system. Like, can you describe how you envision that looking, or is there some other language and statute somewhere maybe Bowley can answer? Like, how do we make sure that that's uniformly applied? It seems like that's vague, as well as anything else that could be construed currently as vague.
Chair Lively, Representative Parrish, that's how I make my living. I don't know how else to put it. But you get rid of the vagueness, then I don't have a cause of action. But then the public employer has to do it, and has to do that. And this is where Representative Evans and I politely disagree. The interview portion of it, as a former supervisor in public employment and now as a supervisor or leader in the Marine Corps, the interview portion of it, I think is just kind of a warm and fuzzy everyone put into the statute so the veteran feels like he got an interview, or it's a way to practice an interview. Now, this is where Representative Evans and I have a polite disagreement about things. But the vagueness that you see in the statute, is going to cause different agencies to apply things differently. Although, as I said, and I can't say this enough, Bowley's got great administrative rules, and all you got to do is call them. But a lot of people don't make that phone call for whatever reason.
Chair Lively, Representative Parrish, as I read it with the preferences, right? The 5 highest ranked with the preferences.
Mm-hmm.
if I may, and I know I'm speaking out of turn, it's effective to look at the federal veterans preference statute. You know, when you print it out, it's this thick, how it's to be applied.
We probably don't want to go to that.
That's my point.
I just want to make sure, as we look at options moving forward, that the dash six doesn't create more ambiguity than we're already dealing with. You know, the five highest rank, major outranks captain. So is that the rank, or is there another definition of rank that you're... See what I mean? I want to make sure. And also, as others come up, if they've had the opportunity to look at the dash six, if they'd like to comment about support or non-support of the dash six, it'd be helpful to me, too.
And Chair Lifley, Representative Huffman, I'd say that different issues in the bill, it was some of the other points that were the biggest issues for us in the challenges in Senate Bill 87 about, especially having the onus on the veterans to prove the transferability of the skills, the sole discretion of the employer making the final decision, and then the multiplicity, the potential multiplicity of practices that Representative Escoval was referring to earlier on. Those were among the big deals to us, as opposed to the final number of applicants or interviewees, or however you want to look at that.
We got lots of people to testify, so.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
If I may, Chair Lively, in closing, Mr. Ginney was a Lance Corporal of mine in Iraq, and he had the same haircut then.
We appreciate that. Okay, let's hear from the counties. We have Commissioner Sid Lycan from Lane County, Travis Graves from Multnomah County, and J.J. Peters from Clackamas County. It's always nice to see you, Commissioner Lycan. Welcome.
Thank you.
Whoever wants to lead this off.
Well, you probably want to start with the smart people first.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and members of the committee. For the record, my name is J.J. Peters, and I am the recruitment manager for Clackamas County.
Very good.
Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today representing Clackamas County's support of Senate Bill 87. Let me start by saying I'm the proud daughter of a retired Oregon National Guardsman and granddaughter of a World War II Army Air Corpsman. I'm equally proud to say, as of May 14, 2015, Clackamas County has hired 24 veterans since January 1, 2014. Clackamas County, like a number of public employers, participated in the Study for Employment Retention of Veterans. We also work hard to attend as many job fairs and outreach events as we can with the goal of attracting veteran applicants. Clackamas County, like many public employers, has struggled over the last couple of years to interpret the existing veterans preference statutes. And please let me assure you, after hearing a little bit of testimony here today and your comments, it's not that we don't want to. We want to do it the right way. And I appreciate the sentiment about contacting Boley each and every time. I've had a number of conversations with Boley, and I'm sorry to say a lot of times the answer is maybe or well, it depends. And each situation can be unique because we do very different selection processes for different types of positions, for hiring a doctor, for example, versus a road maintenance worker. The process can vary drastically. The current statutes are confusing and provide no real guidance for public employers. One example, ORS 408.230, Section 2, Subsection C, broadly states that a public employer shall devise and apply methods by which the employer gives special consideration to veterans and disabled veterans going through an examination process that does not result in a score. This statute gives no definition for what methods and special consideration looks like, and does not provide direction on how the employer should devise and apply methods. Without this needed guidance and direction, employers are left to take their best guess at developing and creating their own methods and then hoping they're acceptable. Additionally,
Bowley's interpretation of the statutes and lack of direction has created unnecessary confusion for employers. The confusion not only creates challenges in the recruitment process for the public employer, but also creates tension and confusion among current employees, including veterans, particularly in the application of the statutes in internal promotional recruitments. One of the most important goals and purpose of Senate Bill 87 is to clarify a statute so that our hiring process is easily understood both by veterans who have earned preference in hiring and promotions by public employers and by the public employers themselves who must apply the statute in various recruitment processes and across many and varied functions and services and departments. Senate Bill 87 offers an important change because it continues to provide veterans with the preference they have earned while providing public employers with clear and meaningful methods and guidance for applying veterans' preference in the hiring process. The clarifications will help public employers maximize limited resources by reserving interviews for the most competitive candidates. And equally as important, these changes will benefit our veterans by ensuring they are given continued preference in the hiring process. We urge your support of Senate Bill 87. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Why don't we hear from all, and then we'll see if there's questions. Thank you, though.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively. My name is Travis Graves, and I'm sorry, I've just had eye surgery, so I'm struggling to see and figure out how to use these reading glasses, so I apologize for that. My name is Travis Graves. I'm the Human Resources Director for Multnomah County. We're a very large employer in the metro area. We have about 4,500 employees. We are here to support Senate Bill 87. Like Clackamas County and other jurisdictions, we've struggled to really understand, and I have to agree with her. We are definitely have every intention to comply with the law. We support hiring veterans. We have support our veterans as employees. We have very strong veterans groups within our organizations. We have an employee resource group that's very active. We take the veterans preference laws very seriously. We've actually had Bowley into our organization. We've sent a number of folks to different kinds of trainings to help us get clarity around how to ensure that we are in compliance with that law. The most difficult piece can be when we're talking about an unscored type situation. I appreciated what DAS showed you. They shared that with the committee that worked to create the work group. So I've seen some of that before, which has helped us as well. You know, we've even continued to create things like e-learnings for all of our hiring managers to make sure that they understand the importance of veterans preference and make sure that we actually are doing the right thing by applying it correctly. When we generally reach out to our regulators, Bowley, and ask questions through technical assistance, and we get really straightforward questions. I have to say, as an employer, we do struggle getting clear and definitive answers around some of the nuances with veterans' preference. Especially, like JJ said, our processes can look very different for different kinds of positions. We do struggle as a large employer with the numbers of applications that we get. I'll give you an example. I heard a question about, you know, how many and how much are we talking about? We have a recent recruitment within our sheriff's office where we had roughly about 300 applicants for a background investigator position. Of those, roughly 65 met the qualifications to go on to the next step of the process. Of those, I think 34 were veterans. What we ended up doing to ensure that we provided the veterans with an opportunity to be interviewed, we actually did about a week and a half worth of interviews with a panel of three managers within that sheriff's office. So that created a huge amount of work for us to do that number of interviews, 65 interviews. At the end of the day, we did hire a veteran. When we looked at the actual pool that we had as well, there were probably four out of that 34 veterans that were actually in the most qualified, folks that really had a good shot of being considered for the job. So just to give you a little illustration about how it can look. We have positions that we literally can open up a recruitment for. Within 3 days, we will have 1,000 applications for it. The workload that goes into screening applications and following the process could be large. So getting to real clarity for us would be very helpful. Let me see here if I'm missing anything, if you don't mind for a second.
Okay, right ahead.
I think in kind of, I really appreciated what the other organizations said, especially in the state of Oregon. I mean, it's helpful to see those different illustrations, and we do try to follow them. In closing, though, for us, the bill really kind of removes the subjectivity. from the law. It ensures that the most qualified veterans are given that interview and given a chance, provides some assurance that the number of candidates that a public employer needs to interview is reasonable for the number of positions that they have, describes a clear method for applying preference when it's an unscored process. It also works for both small and large jurisdictions. I think one of the difficulties that we have is we don't all have the same set of rules for how civil service, if you will, is applied. We even don't even define civil service by any means in the same way. So just some of the language that's in there from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, when I apply my frame of reference to the language, it looks something different than what Clackamas County does. And so our hope with working on the work group was to actually create something that was more universal, that all of the public employers, small and large, would be able to follow. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions as well.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Commissioner?
Chair Lively, Vice Chair Esquivel, and Vice Chair Boone. My name is Sid Lykin, serving the Lane County Board of Commissioners. And today I'm actually pinch hitting for my colleague, Lane County Farr, who's out of town right now. And I think you've heard really from my colleagues here to the right, to my right, and I think they explained, I think, from the human resource standpoint. There was a comment that Representative Esquivel made just earlier. My father is a veteran, and in fact, he served in Berlin the first anniversary of the wall when it went up, and my father-in-law actually served as a Korean veteran. And one of the things, my father was a private sector employer for many, many years, a building development company, and actually gave preference to veterans constantly. And that was just part of his practice. And obviously, from my perspective, and just watching him and in his background, actually worked out quite well. I think from our perspective, I think they defined from the HR perspective, I think, quite well. But from our perspective in Lane County, I'll just be brief. And just to kind of reinforce what I've heard my colleagues here at state and our support, and that is the existing statutes on veterans' preference are unclear, confusing, and provide no real guidance on implementation for public employers. SB 87 has defined terms, clearly states legislative intent, policy and purposes, and applies a preference process using methods that can easily be understood by veterans and public employers. The changes to the statute would resolve significant problems with the current statute and give veterans meaningful preference in the employment process. I know that I think for me personally, I think for many folks, if there's any opportunity we can give for those who have sacrificed, and whether they've been in combat or not, from my point of view, that doesn't always matter. But the fact they've given it to this country, if there's any way we can make sure those rules are more clear for public employers to provide those opportunities, I think that's something that I know from Lane County's perspective we'd be strongly supportive. So appreciate the time to testify. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Esquivel.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. You said you had 65 veterans that you interviewed. All 65 of those people were former MPs or APs or SPs?
Chair Lively, Representative Esquivel. If I said 65 veterans, I didn't say that correctly. We had about 65 total that were the most qualified. 34 of those were veterans. So I'm
okay,
sorry.
But of the veterans, you had 34 that were former military police or something?
I don't know exactly what their titles were when they were veterans, but they actually qualified under the veterans' preference laws to receive veterans. Yeah, so they turned
in. I wonder if we don't have a lack of communication. Well, maybe we're talking, but we're not communicating. What I mean by that is I'm going to interview for, you talked about a doctor. Well, I wouldn't bring in a tank driver and use that as a preference.
Sure.
I would bring in a doctor. Or if we had someone that was, you wanted to do, that was heavy equipment operator, you bring in a CB, you wouldn't bring in a doctor. So I want to make sure that we're on the same page, that we are related MOS. I think that's what they call it in the Army, don't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we call it a rate in the Navy, but I mean, but the same job description must correspond with what you're looking for. And I don't agree that just because you're a veteran, you should get an interview. I don't believe that's the fact. I think that you have to have the qualifications for the job.
Sure. Chair Lively, Representative Esquivel, if I can speak to that. I think what I hear you saying is that you're looking at the veteran's military experience exclusively. Is that right?
Or prior experience.
Okay, yes. And so that's what we look at. We don't look at just the veterans' military experience. We look at all of their skills, qualifications, and experience for the position that's relevant to the position. And one thing that was very helpful that I think Boley ended up redacting was there was a point, and I want to say it came about a December or November of 2013. Don't quote me on that. Maybe it was 2000. Yeah, that sounds about right. Anyway, they asked us to be very clear in our job postings what the minimum qualifications were and what the preferred qualifications were. And when they redacted that, we actually kept it in place in Clackamas County because we found that it was very helpful for us and when we're working with our hiring managers, as well as for not only veterans, but really all applicants to understand what is it that the employer is looking at as the minimum qualifications for this position. So I'm not sure if I'm getting to the point of your question, but each of our job postings lists very clearly what the minimum qualifications are for the job, and then it goes on to talk about the preferred qualifications, because as Travis stated, we don't usually get thousands because, frankly, we keep a lot of our job postings open for shorter periods of time, so that doesn't happen. But we could get hundreds of applications for a job. And so if we have, let's say, 100 applicants that met the minimum qualifications for a job for one job opening, we would look at additional skills and experience related to the job and cut that pool down further. We always ensure, though, that if the veteran met the minimum qualifications, even if they didn't meet the preferred qualifications, that they are given preference and move on to that next stage in the process. Not sure if I've addressed your question or not. Okay.
I mean, I just don't want to compare an apple and an orange. I want that background that they've been to maybe a school, or maybe they've been in the fleet or the field, or the theater, they've been working in that job, and they should get a preference and preference points to that job.
So, Mr. Graves, if I might, I'd like to because I think I heard from Das, though, that spoke earlier about, and I'm trying to stay away from the term rank, but maybe scoring. I'm trying to understand, so you go through and people meet, quote, the minimum qualifications. After that point, and she's talked about that next level, but is there a scoring or something involved besides? Because in many cases, when we talk about the veteran's preference, we talk about a number of points. Mm-hmm. In some places, have the points. So I'm trying to understand in your process where you ended up with 34 to interview.
Right.
So what was the next thing that ended up with 34 people there? Was there a ranking system? I'm trying to understand what the system is.
So I can talk really generally kind of how we do it and some specifics around this one. I'm not as familiar with every specific part of the recruitment, right. But most definitely there's a process that we would go through to determine who is the most eligible. A lot of times that is a scored system.
Okay.
So we would be looking at, we had 300 applications. We narrowed it down to 65 actually met those minimum qualifications. Then we evaluate them further to determine kind of who there in some type of a scored system are going to be the most qualified.
Right.
For this specific recruitment I was talking about, we would probably have brought in the top 15% or whatnot. However, because we hadn't brought folks in that are veterans that had interviews yet that were qualified. It wasn't as if they were in a totally different kind of job. They actually were qualified for this position. We wanted to make sure that we cast the broadest net. Therefore, we did a very large interview pool. As a county, we're committed to looking at our system and structures around minimum qualifications, and we've really been striving to break down any barriers in those systems so that we actually are bringing in more and more diverse candidates to bring into our pool, so that we're not so we're actually taking more into account. So we know that takes more work, so we're willing to do that. However, we just want to make sure that we're following all of the rules and it's not a huge overburdened type amount of work.
Sure. Any other questions, Representative Huffman?
So in your example, on the 34 veteran applicants out of the 60 some, based on your interpretation of the rules, did you feel like you had to interview all 34 veterans?
I would say to be safe, yes. We were very conservative, ensuring that we are giving veterans as much preference as required under the law. And we honestly didn't, as an organization, don't want to do anything where we're not compliant with the law. So,
in a follow-up comment, Mr. Chair, as somebody that worked on this over the last several biennia and had input, my personal opinion is that I never would have anticipated creating a law that would require somebody to interview 34 veterans. I would have assumed that we ended up with a process that allowed a ranking, if you will, paring it down to X number, and maybe that's based on a percentage of the total applicant pool. If you've got 100 applicants and you're going to, you know, truly interview 10% of those, then a parity number of veterans needs to be in that. That's kind of where I thought we were heading in 2011.
Okay. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So one of the issues that has been brought to my attention is that public employers don't like the civil right of action that was created in the bill in 2011. And you heard us talk about today, there is a parallel bill out there that creates a civil right of action around an employment practice for convicts. And I think in Multnomah County, some of the commissioners have been favorable to that concept, although none testified either for or against. But I think publicly there have been people in Multnomah County who supported the concept. Creates a process whereby you can, you know, be subject to up to 2 years of back pay for failure. So if this is unworkable for somebody who's honorably served their country, I guess I'm a little concerned and confused that counties were silent on a similar process that creates a right of action for convicts and said nothing. I'm frustrated as a military spouse that we would be supplanting convicts for veterans. And full disclosure, I have convicts in my family who can now, you know, under 3025, should that become law, come sue you. Like, there's a pathway for that under this bill. So how is this different that you would come here and ask for a fix for veterans and not ask for a similar or express similar concern over a bill to hire convicts?
I can't speak exactly to that. I could just our chair Lively and representative. I can say that as an organization, Multnomah County banned the box in 2007. So it may be that it's something that we were on the forefront of, and so therefore watching the rest of the state go through it. Not having been that involved, I can't exactly say. From my perspective, though, this really isn't an issue of a cause of action. It's actually an issue of wanting to make sure as an employer that we are doing the right thing and giving veterans their due, following the law, and being compliant with what the legislature has asked us to do. And I think that's really the space that I'm coming from, is really wanting to make sure that I'm giving good advice to all of our hiring, you know, 400 and 500 hiring managers that are making decisions on the front line every day who to hire. Make sure I give them the right advice of how they need to apply the veterans preference. I think that, you know, there's a cause of action for employment cases that's so wide that if I was going to use that as the means of why I would want to do something, I could be just chasing myself all the way around. So it's really just about wanting us to clarify and being compliant from my perspective.
So you said Multnomah County did the ban the box in 2007. Ban the box, and was that through a commission vote, and did it create a civil right of action within your county, or you just simply took it off the application? Because that's really different.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you just took it off the application.
Yeah. Chair Lively,
with no action,
yeah, representative.
Creating,
yes,
that civil right of action.
Absolutely.
Very
so,
different concept.
Yeah, absolutely. But definitely before the legislative looking at that, we actually did it just as a matter of principle in terms of wanting to make sure that the folks that had criminal records actually would be able to make it through our processes.
Representative Evans, do you have a question?
I do, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
I'd like to follow up on the example that Representative Huffman was talking about with the 65 folks. Just to clarify, and I want to make sure we're talking the same thing. First, there were 65 total interviewed, of which 34 were veterans, right? Of the 34, by the standard of the job application your organization wrote, how many of the 34 were not qualified?
Chair Lively, representative, I would say they all were qualified. So of those 34, they were all qualified to be able to do the position. They met the minimum qualification.
So my argument would be, hypothetically, just suggestion, that if there's a too big of a pool that are qualified, maybe HR can tighten up what qualified or what you're actually looking for. Because to me, I agree, we didn't pass a bill to have 1,000 interviews just for the sake of interviews. On the other hand, if my HR guy or gal had said, hey, we've got 100 folks to interview and these qualifications, of which 50 of them are veterans, I'd go, that sounds good. Next time that happens, I shoot you. Because 100 people is a lot to interview just in total. So I guess what I'm trying to say is it seems that perhaps not all of the problem of having to interview that many people were that they were veterans, if they were in fact qualified by the standards you defined. throwing that out there.
So we have four more people that we need to have testify. We only got 15 minutes left.
Can I just ask one question?
I guess what I'm getting at on this is if you have 10 people that all have the same qualifications, except you have one individual that's a veteran that had prior experience in the field and or in a school, that would be your my preference. If that makes it simpler for you.
Is there anything, as you're a hiring person, is there anything in the state law that precludes you when you have such a big pool like that to go back before an interview process and say, we have so many qualified people, we want you to do a subsequent round of here's some additional criteria or question set so that you can further limit? I mean, that would just make good hiring sense anyway, whether we're talking about veterans or not. Nobody wants to interview. You have to go through an interview process where you're hiring 60 people. But it seems to me I can't find anything that would preclude you as somebody, a public employer, to be able to say, we're going to ask one more subsequent round of something else we didn't ask you so that you get a narrower pool without, you know, and which would then keep you in compliance with the law. And then maybe you'd only have 15 people out of the 34 who met that standard. You could have further narrowed that 34 without having to find the four that you were looking for and then eventually hired one. I mean, I can't find anything that would preclude you from a subsequent layering of some additional information request before going into your interview process.
Chair Lively, Representative Parrish, I can't exactly say, but I wasn't actually the one doing the recruitment. I know that their process that they had created for this was an evaluation of the qualifications, evaluation of training experience, and they were going to do an interview. And I think to ensure that they brought in all the qualified veterans, and they determined they were qualified veterans, they determined they wanted to give them all an interview. I'm not saying there wouldn't have been another way. I will say as an organization that we are trying to cast a wider net, not a narrower net. We are really trying to ensure that we are recruiting from as wide a range as possible. And we're actually looking at our system minimum qualifications and not necessarily wanting them to be tighter. We're actually wanting to get more people into our pools.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate you engaging in this conversation. This is not, obviously, we're all learning as we go and we're having this conversation, but I appreciate you taking the time to do that. So thank you very much. So next up, Rod Edwards, Michael Savaggio. Just introduce yourself for the record, please.
Rod Edwards, I'm the president for the Fraternal Order of Police here in the state of Oregon. Chair Lively, Vice Chair Escobal, and committee members. We have a written testimony submitted. I'll try to keep this short. As the Senate Bill 87 was submitted to you guys through the Senate, we would oppose that as that is written. After reviewing the -6 amendments that was proposed, we think if this bill truly is to clarify for the government entities to how they're going to recognize veterans and get the process done through the for the either hiring or promotional processes, A6 is a great I think it's a great step towards getting this clarified to help the everybody clarify it. So if the board would accept -6 on that, the FOP would support that.
Thank you very much. Michael.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Michael Salvaggio here for the Oregon Coalition of Police and Sheriffs, representing over 2,500 members of law enforcement around the state, that a lot of whom have military experience. I submitted testimony, so I'm just going to point to that, but restate our strong opposition to 87A as it currently stands. We recognize that there is some confusion over the current law among a small subset of employers. We note that most of the state seems to have implemented it successfully without incurring apocalyptic swarms of interviews. So we don't think that there's much of a problem there with the current laws as it stands, but if there's additional clarification needed, we'd like to direct you to the -1 amendments, which we would be fine with. We would also like to say that it looks at first glance like the A6s seem like an improvement to the current law. I can't say at this early point in time whether we would certainly be in favor of that, but that looks very promising to me. I just want to put on the record briefly, I wholeheartedly agree with the county's characterization as this bill improving clarity and removing subjectivity based on Section 5 of the current bill, which says that the determination of whether military education or experience is a transferable skill for a competitive position is within the public employer's sole discretion. That absolutely removes subjectivity. I'm no longer wondering what they're subject to. They're not subject to much of anything, and to us this is an absolute chipping away of the veterans' preferences that have been enshrined in our statutes, and we will oppose that bill in its current form to the strongest degree we can.
Great. Any questions on these? Mr. Evans?
Chair Lively, I'd just like to, I know one of the two up there has had personal experience with this process, and I just want to say thank you for your own experience and coming up and standing up for those that aren't here.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you very much for testifying. So now I'll call up Kathy, is it Peak? Okay, and Heidi Brown and Scott Winkles. Whoever would like to go first.
May I go first?
Certainly.
Chair and representatives, thank you for having me testify here today. My name is Kathy Peck. I'm the founding partner of a law firm, Peck, Rubinoff and Hatfield, formerly of Williams, Graffs and Peck. I have practiced exclusive management labor employment law for 38 years. Dim the lights. It's been a long time. I am very preventative oriented, and I'm here to tell you it is not accurate to assume that Boley can just be called up and give answers to folks about how this law is to be interpreted. And I'd like to read you an excerpt from an email I got from Jeff Burgess, who is the guru, so to speak, at Boley, regarding a question I posed on this statute. In short, we do not think Boley has the information from any statutory authority, administrative rule, or other authoritative source to make a determination on the generic question, is a competitive premium pay assignment distinguishable from a promotion and therefore not covered by the Veterans Preference Statute? That is just one example of some fairly simple questions that even Boley, and I don't mean to criticize Boley, it's just that Boley can't tell by the wording of the statute what their answer should be. When I talked to Jeff Burgess and about things as basic as, can an employer set the points at 150? Can they set them at 200? Should they be 120? And he doesn't have an answer to that. When I ask, how in the world do you take the rule for interviews and come up with a method for preferring veterans that's not quantitative if you're adding it to numbers? He can't answer that question. And bless his heart, I completely understand why. This statute does need to be fixed. And I'm here to tell you that if you want to create a pathway for veterans to be fully utilized and successful in their employment, give employers a roadmap to get them on the road there. This statute does not do that. It doesn't do that. And I represent a lot of, I represent Hillsborough and Gresham and have done work for Multnomah County and Clackamas County, some large employers. But our bread and butter client is the West Lynn. It's the Tualatin. It's Ontario. It's Cannon Beach, Kaiser. And they're entities that have people who are very busy wearing multiple hats. They are less likely to call and get guidance. And when they do give guidance, someone with my experience can't tell them definitively, this is what you need to do. Employers deserve to know how to comply with a very legitimate, well-intended, well-meaning statute. And if you give them those tools, they will comply. I don't think any of our clients are anti-veteran, heaven forbid. We just need to know how to do it. And it's been my experience that someone who is wearing the HR hat, doing payroll, doing multiple other things, is more likely just to be paralyzed than to go and proceed and walk forward and give veterans what they need to guide them if you would just give them that. And that's what I'm asking you to do today. This is, I fully support what you heard here from Multnomah County, from Clackamas County, from the myriad of other jurisdictions that say this is confusing. It is confusing. And I've taught employment discrimination at the law school level. This statute is confusing. And that's not to say that it wasn't given a very good go of it in 2007 and again in 2011, but it can be better. And if you make it better, it will help veterans.
Thank you. Please.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of this committee. My name is Heidi Brown. I thank you for this opportunity to speak here today. I am a deputy city attorney with the dreaded city of Portland. I've heard a few of you. I wish I had a plate or something to hold up for you to distract you for a minute. But my history is I came to work for the city of Portland in August of 2013. Prior to that, I was in private practice for many years representing labor side and doing labor and employment, so I was on the other side. And when I came on with the city, I became involved in veterans' preference very shortly after starting there. And I was particularly interested in this issue because of my own 6 years of service as a medic in the Army Reserves back when I was 19 years old. And I will say that I've witnessed the city of Portland work very, very hard to try to comply with this law and try to give preference in the way that the legislature intended to. And unlike the current law, Senate Bill 87 will give us the clarity I think that we need in order to properly enforce law and give veterans the preference that they deserve. I think you were asking questions, somebody was asking questions that wanted cities and counties to answer, how are you currently applying the law? We've gone through several iterations of our administrative rules that implement this law. The most recent one that we have gives folks a couple different ways of applying preference. The first one is points. And then the second one is, another one is that you can choose from different factors, and we've called those, these are your special consideration factors. And what we came up with was, for example, provide the veteran with an opportunity to meet with the hiring manager and the interview or the interview panelist prior to actually coming into an interview. Maybe they have 30 minutes to ask questions, find out more about the job, find out more about what they're seeking, and then have some time to formulate some answers to the questions when they actually go into. Another idea was to include some of them with military experience on the panel so that when a veteran is trying to articulate some of their military skills that they have obtained that might be transferable, that there would be somebody on the panel who could help them articulate that. And another one that we thought of was just giving them some extra credit and strength in their interview for describing some of their military experience that may transfer again to the job skills that we're looking for in the job. Unfortunately, I've been in a position of recommending against all of our panelists and hiring managers utilizing those special consideration factors, and the reason is because I don't know if I can defend those if we're sued. I have called Boley several times. I have been to two or three work groups that Boley's attended and tried to work with us on, and I've attended two or three presentations by Boley. I've seen their slideshow actually probably five or six times now. Despite my asking, how do we apply special consideration? Are these factors that we've come up with at the City of Portland, are they sufficient to be special consideration? I get that same answer that other people are saying, maybe, we don't know. So that leaves us in a position at the end of the day with my recommendation being to all of our hiring managers that we apply points only. Points are easy to apply and easy to assess later. I think that the downfall to points is that they tend to be not quite so thoughtful as an unscored process. In an unscored process, at least at the City of Portland, from what I've seen from hiring managers, they'll make notes about the answers that the applicant gave, say they said something that struck them as a good answer or maybe not a good answer, but they'll make notes about that. And so you'll see all their questions and you'll see a list of different things that they answered, and they use that to assess how the candidate lives up to what you're looking for the ideal person. Unfortunately, we're just not. I don't feel confident at all in advising our current hiring managers to use any process other than somehow assigning points because we don't have a definition of special consideration, and I don't have an answer to that.
Can I ask?
Do you want me to stop? Yeah.
Well, just so when you're talking about applying points, I guess I'm confused because there is, you know, in federal law, there, you know, apply this many points if you are a veteran, apply this many if you're disabled. Is that what you're talking about? Are you talking about, like, how do you even get to the point of an interview? Because the 2011 bill didn't have anything to do about applying a veteran's preference like the federal law. It said if you were qualified, that we would open up that door for an interview. So to me, that means, from, you know, if I was hiring, that I would apply that, or based on what the legislative intent was, I would apply that in such a way that, well, I've applied their 10 points because they're a disabled veteran, and then the job was the City of Portland Police, you know, bureau job, and this person was an MP in the military, and they have a, say, a two-year associate's degree is maybe what you require, and, oh, that happens to be a criminal justice and not, like, basket weaving, that this is somebody who's qualified, and because they're qualified, now we're going to give them an interview. That's not a points process to me. That's, were they qualified for the job? They are qualified. They meet that test. We're going to bring them in. So I guess I'm kind of confused when you say you apply points. Is that just to score them as being qualified, or is that that we're going to bring them in for the interview part? I'm not clear in your testimony.
Chair Lively, Representative Parrish. Because Boley has interpreted the current law to mean that you have to apply preference at each stage of the hiring process, and what they view that as is anytime you make a cut and call out folks to move on to the next level, that you give preference. So doing it the way you said we do, say we score an application materials, give 5 or 10 points. If they have transferable skills, actually at the City of Portland, we just say all veterans who meet minimum qualifications are given an interview. But under the current law, I think if they had transferable skills, we would be required then to interview them. But at the but because we've cut people out to move on to the interview level, at the interview we then have to give another preference, and that's where we get really stuck. More so than that, I would say at the final interview stage. So when we have we've culled it down to 3 final applicants, it's very challenging to figure out how to give preference other than via points. So what we do is, when they come up with a list of questions that they're going to ask the applicants, I've advised them to assign points to each of the questions, and then at the end, you know, total's 100. At the end, the veteran may end up with 105. Disabled veteran could end up with 110 if they had a perfect score. So because of the requirement from Boley's interpretation that we apply preference at each stage of the hiring process, then, and because we've been unable to figure out what special consideration would mean, what I've advised is we just keep applying points at each stage. So at each interview, we apply points. Thank you.
Sure.
I also just had a few more comments. I wanted to say one of the interviews that we do is for utility worker too. I know from my own experience going through basic training, I learned how to dig a ditch. And that's pretty much the requirements for us for a utility worker, is that you know how to dig a ditch. So in answer to your question, Representative Esquivel, about the number of people and how can we limit it, it is hard because really the qualifications are to be able to dig a ditch. And so we might get 500 applicants for a position like that, and we could have 100 or more veterans applying. And then it puts us in the situation of having interviews that I would say aren't as meaningful as we want them to be, because we have such a huge number of people. To pare it back down, I would not be comfortable. I would advise against our hiring managers doing a second level of qualifications, because I think once we posted what our minimum qualifications are and announced that in our job posting, to then, after we've had people apply, pull that back, I would absolutely see Sean Riddell filing a lawsuit against the city saying that we had not given preference as we were required to do.
I feel like that's a poor example. I mean, if all you're asking from your utility people is that they know how to dig a ditch, my husband learned how to do that in the military too, but I wouldn't put him in the classification of someone who knows which wire to grab onto and not like hurt himself, or, you know, there's other skills that go in with the job that you're asking. So, I mean, as somebody who helped, you know, carry that bill on the floor, I wouldn't see that just because you knew how to dig a ditch that would make you qualified for that job, because my husband got that too. But there's some other qualifications around that job. My husband probably couldn't apply for that job. I went under the original bill, would never have considered him qualified to go be a utility worker for the city of Portland, nor a police officer for the city of Portland. I mean, there's a whole bunch of jobs he's not qualified to do. I mean, this strikes me as either poorly written HR stuff, or it just, that example doesn't hold water with me, because everybody learns how to dig a ditch, but not everybody in the military is a utility worker or a, you know, I'm just struggling with this.
So let's just admit at this point, we all have a little different interpretation, and so that's part of what the problem is, I think, that we're pointing out in this law, mm-hmm. is some of those that have been here longer than me, have some assumptions of what the original intent was. Some of us that are brand new have some assumptions, and certainly they who have been trying to apply it have been trying to apply it. So let's not, you know, at this point, it's not to matter who's got the correct assumption. I just try to figure out what the facts are and then see if we have a path forward. It's really
well, Chair Lally, I just take exception with if somebody got a skill in the military, that makes them qualified, which is what I just heard, which is why I'm pointing that out. I mean, it's
Scott, please. Or somebody. We're running out of time, and so I don't want to cut people off.
I understand it. And it is unclear under the current law whether you have to have all the skills that are posted in the job posting, or whether if you have one transferable skill, is that sufficient? So so that's why we're in that position. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Winkles, representing the League of Oregon Cities. I can see we're past time, so I'll be brief. I'd like to call your attention to the letter that the city of Beaverton submitted to the committee, and I think that illustrates very specifically what we mean when we say lack of clarity. The city of Beaverton was going through the process of assigning some police officers to certain details. Those details included some what we call incentive pay or some on-call pay. And the question that the city of Beaverton had posed to Boley was that is this a promotion because it increases the final salary? These are assignments. The process for assigning these positions is covered in the collective bargaining agreement. And so the city of Beaverton was sort of wondering, are they subject to a ULP, an unfair labor practice complaint, should that be filed against them? Or would they be subject to a complaint under Boley for not complying with the veterans' preference statutes? Now, where the employer came down on, and where we will always, or public employers always come down on, is we don't bargain whether or not we comply with the law. We'll bargain the impact, but we won't bargain whether or not we comply. But when the agency asked Boley whether or not these were promotions, what they got was a resounding maybe. And I don't fault Boley for that. And if you read the statute, I don't think it was intended, but I think that's the best answer they had, and that was because of the state of the statute. And so that level of clarity is what we're asking for. Is it, are these assignments within a certain grade a promotion because they happen to entail on-call pay or an incentive pay because you're assigning a sergeant to a detective position that naturally involves on-call work? And that's the sort of clarity we're working for. And I also like to point out, if you look at the numbers of, I'm sorry, I'm pulling statistics on my phone, I'm not checking my Twitter. If you look at the numbers, the employment picture of veterans in this country, roughly 21% of male veterans who are active in the workforce are employed in the public sector. That's compared to 11% of non-veterans. It actually goes up quite a bit higher for women. Women veterans who are active in the workforce, 29% of them are employed in public employers, compared to 18% non-veterans. And I'd also say that I have heard stories from my membership of cities that have worked with people who have come back from our current wars, and gone above and beyond and actually had to fight with their bargaining units over whether or not they could extend full benefit packages to people who come back tragically disabled. And as the brother of a veteran and a son of a veteran, we take this seriously. And we think we're good employers. And I would encourage you to take really drill down on the numbers of where that unemployment problem lies. And I think what you're going to find is that it's recent veterans who have come back. They're in typically infantry or combat artillery where there's not a clear transferable. When we talk about people who are coming back from with heavy equipment operator skills, what I think the numbers tell me, lead me to conclude, is that those folks are coming up, are getting positions. It's the people who are coming back in largely infantry positions. It's the recent veteran that has an incredibly high unemployment rate, but other service period veterans tend to be significantly lower than the overall unemployment rate. And I think if we want to solve this problem, we need to take a good hard look at where the problem lies. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony.
Thank you very much. And I appreciate everybody that took the time to testify today. We have a work session scheduled for next week. It's really not going to be a work session. We've got a lot that we have to sort through here. I would hope Director Smith, sitting back there, might have some time on Thursday that we could have for a further conversation, ask some questions, and then we'll see kind of where we might decide a path forward. But I appreciate the time everybody took today. Obviously, there is confusion over how it's interpreted and applied. And while we've heard it works great in some places, it's not working so great in others, which means it is. And so I appreciate pointing that out, and we'll try to sort through this. We have several amendments. We have the original bill, but maybe Director Smith, we'll start with the work session, and we'll let other people at that point, if there's other things, new things that we want to hear at that point before we decide kind of how we're going to proceed.
See, what I thought was interesting is some of the stuff we had here. You're talking about 100 veterans and 400 other people. We don't say anything about the 400 other people, it's just the 100 veterans.
That's somehow because you're suggesting somehow we narrowed down that 400 other people.
Maybe, I don't know.
Okay, thank you all very much for being here. And committee will adjourn. Adjourn. Committee will